committee to order, and members, we're going to vary from the agenda slightly in that we're going to go into work session on 2743 first. So I open a work session on House Bill 2743. We have some amendments that have been prepared. So, Patrick, would you give us a little rundown on what the amendments do, please?
Sure, I'd be glad to. As you recall, we heard House Bill 2743 last Thursday. At the time, we discussed the possibility of some amendments. The amendments that were discussed in particular were the dash one amendments to 2743, and those delete the emergency clause in the bill so that the bill would, under the dash ones, become effective January 1st, 2004. The dash two amendments prescribe an effective date, and under these, the bill would take effect on the 91st day after the end of the regular session.
Okay. Okay, with that, Representative Mabry, I'm going to go to you, and we're in work session, so.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash two amendments dated March 10th be replaced in the bill.
Okay, Representative Mabry moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2743. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I would just like to go on record with my great appreciation for this committee, understanding the critical need and the responsibility we have to support our veterans. And I'm just grateful for this, working out of this bill, and want to thank you, and let's roll.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, are there any objections to the amendments, dash two amendments in House Bill 2743? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, Representative Mabry.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2743 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. That would include the dash two amendments.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mabry moves House Bill 2743 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to rescind the subsequent referral to Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion. Seeing none, then, Gina, you want to call the roll, please?
Yay.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, excuse. Aye. House Bill 2743, as amended, having received the majority, is on its way to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Mabry, would you carry this bill?
I'd be delighted to carry the bill. May I make one more comment? We have a number of our veterans out here that have made the trip a second time, some of them across town and some of them across part of the state. And thank you for your commitment. They're our very fine friends.
Yep. Great. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2743.
All right.
And let's see. We're going to move on then, committee, to... Oh, and Representative Mabry, you will carry the bill, right?
I will.
Okay. We're going to move on then to House Bill 2818, and so I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2818. And Patrick, would you give us a rundown on this bill, please?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2818 exempts a special district which is annexing a city at the city's request from election requirements for the annexation under certain conditions. The bill provides for that the special district's electors may petition for an election regarding the annexation. One thing I should mention, that the SMS indicates that no fiscal statement has yet been issued. I spoke to the fiscal analysts this morning, and they indicated that there will be a fiscal impact statement issued. It will indicate that the fiscal impact of the bill will be a cost avoidance. So it's not a cost, but it's a savings. And I believe that Burton Wiest will be speaking to that in his testimony.
Okay, great. Okay, with that then, let's have Burton, you and Alec want to come up together. And then we'll have Linda Ludwig and Genoa Ingram and Ken Armstrong are batting cleanup.
Chair Crummell, members of the committee, my name is Burton Wiest. Trying to get over a cold. My name is Burton Wiest. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, and with me is Alec Jensen, the Administrative Chief at Tuolumne Valley Fire and Rescue. We have some written testimony for you. I will just summarize the testimony quickly here rather than read it to you, which
that'd be good.
Hopefully you'll appreciate.
Very much.
House Bill 2818 is brought to you by the Special Districts, the Oregon Fire District Directors. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Representative Kitts. Thank you. Special Districts Association has over 800 members in Oregon, and virtually every corner of the state is covered by a special district of some nature. The most numerous special districts are fire districts, water districts, park and recreation districts, irrigation districts, and those kinds of services. And in almost every city, there is a special district that provides a service to that city. If you look around the state, you will find that water and sewer in particular and fire are the types of special districts that more and more are joining with cities in providing their services and their protection. Washington County, where the chair is from and Representative Kitts is from, is probably the best example in the state of where special districts and cities have worked together to provide services. And why is that happening? It's happening simply because of money. And Representative Avakian, excuse me, I forgot to mention you also. It is happening because with Measure 5 and followed by Measure 50, money has become more difficult to raise by local governments, and so those governments are looking for efficiencies and ways to provide services at a lower cost per resident. And by merging services, often that is a tool that is used to accomplish that end. For example, it makes no sense in an area to have 20 fire districts in one county, perhaps, or to have several expensive sewer plants or water treatment plants. For that reason, you have the situation where cities and districts get together to provide those services jointly, and there's examples of it all over the state. Corvallis, for example, their city fire department provides fire services for the rural district that is around them. TVFNR, which we'll talk about later, provides services to multiple cities. Clackamas Fire District 1 in Clackamas County provides services to several cities in addition to the unincorporated area. One of the issues that has arisen, however, is the actual annexation process between cities and districts. The current statute provides that when a city annexes a district, what happens is the people who are being annexed have the right to vote. In other words, the people who would be affected and their taxes would be affected by the annexation have the right to vote. However, in the statute, when a district annexes a city, both the residents of the district and the residents of the city both vote. So there is a difference in the law, and basically the thrust of House Bill 2818 is to make the district annexation statutes the same as the city annexation statutes. Mr. Jensen from TVFNR will explain why this is important. Historically, it has not been much of an issue because the size of the district and the size of the city historically have been pretty much equal in size, and this has not been a problem. But now with the movement towards more and more large districts that supply services to more than one city and the sheer size of some of these districts, this requirement is now actually an impediment to cities and districts getting together and providing these services. So that's really the bottom line on this bill, is to equalize the situation between cities and districts with respect to annexing each other. The other thing that we have done in the bill that does not exist in the city statute is we have put a remonstrance clause in this legislation that provides that if 100 or more citizens, no matter what the size of the district, decide they want to vote on the potential annexation, then they can do that through a remonstrance petition of 100 people or less, and that's a very low standard. So if there is a controversy or an issue in the district, it is very easy for the patrons of the district to get the measure on the ballot. The other provision in the bill is a requirement that the district, when they're annexing a city, that the city can be no more than 10% of the size of the district. The theory there is that ensures that what we're doing here is we're having very large districts annex smaller cities. And so we're trying to protect the rights of those taxpayers. I might add that given Measure 50 and given the tax rate situation we have now, where there is a fixed tax rate, it is actually the people who are being annexed who face any potential tax changes, not the people who are in the existing district. So that's another reason why we felt this bill was appropriate. With that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Jensen, who can talk about why we're here, I guess a real-world example of why this bill is important and this change in the law is important.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Alec Jensen. I'm the executive officer for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. For those of you not familiar with our organization, we serve approximately 400,000 people in Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah counties, 10 cities, and the unincorporated areas surrounding those cities. A couple of quick points before I give you kind of my real-life scenario. Burton was talking about, under the current scenario, having to vote such an annexation in both the city and the district. I wanted to emphasize that those are, in fact, separate elections. Not only do we currently have to vote those in the city and the district, but those are completely separate elections. And then in terms of history, we haven't always had to do it this way. As an example, many years ago, the fire district annexed the city of Beaverton, but under the earlier Boundary Commission statutes, these issues weren't necessarily put to a vote of the people. That was really contingent upon what the Boundary Commission asked to have done. In terms of a real-life scenario, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, as I said, serves 10 cities. Eight of those cities are actually annexed to the fire district, cities where that are part of the fire district where we currently levy taxes. Two of those cities are contract cities. West Lynn, as an example, approached us about 5 years ago and asked if we would consider providing fire protection. In essence, they would be giving up their fire department and turning it over to us. The time we talked about annexation, we decided that there's more to know about the relationship. You want to have an opportunity to get to know one another. So in essence, we've been providing contract fire protection now for 5 years, and we're at a point where the parties are seriously considering annexation. Under the current statute, the way the statute is currently configured, we'll have to have a vote both within the city of West Lynn, which is less than 20,000 people, and in the fire district. The cost of that election alone to the fire district, just for the fire district portion, that I looked up our election costs yesterday, is roughly $30,000 just to conduct the election. And that doesn't include the public information campaign, which would be a critical component. And at a minimum, a direct mail piece to the registered voters of our fire district is pushing $20,000. So we're looking at a $50,000 impact to the fire district in conducting this election. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you have, but that's the best I can do to kind of frame it into a box.
Representative Kitts.
Alec, I added a question, and I don't think you're going to get an argument with anybody in the panel about the cost of elections. my question is if you don't have an election to decide annexation or not, then who would decide? Am I missing that? I mean, you just arbitrarily say we're not going to, we are, we aren't?
Well, if I understand your question correctly, there are annexation scenarios that don't require a vote. The scenario we're discussing here is the annexation of an entire city.
Okay.
And in that context, a vote is required. There, to my knowledge, there's no mechanism in the statute that would provide for an annexation that large, that comprehensive, without a vote of the affected citizens.
So this would
follow up.
So this wouldn't affect an annexation that would take place within a city, a city wanting to incur new land as part of the city. That would have nothing to do with
absolutely
what you're, okay.
No impact.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just follow up on your example, if I could, and have you walk us through on the proposed changes on House Bill 2818, when you look under 3, where it says a district board is not required to call an election if, and are we using sub A in the example you're saying that the city encompasses less than 10% of the population of the bay, of the district?
That's correct. That would be the Westland scenario.
Okay, and so in that case, really, you wouldn't have to have a vote. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But you are saying that, okay, and then for that, playing that example out, if 100 people or whatever, 10% or less, said that they didn't want to have a vote, if they got the signatures, they would have that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Now,
if I could follow up, yes.
Regarding, I think you gave us another situation scenario where only the, let's say, the individual area that's going to be annexed into the district may be required to vote as compared to people that are already in the district but not in the affected area. Would the people who are on the outside that are not affected in within the district but not in the proposed annexation area be able to have the same redress of forcing a vote if they had 100 people within the outlying area of the district?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative, the answer is the 10% applies to the residents of the district, not the residents of the city. If the district is annexing the city, the residents of the city get the vote, mm-hmm. because they're the ones whose taxes will change if the annexation takes place. The 100-person requirement to sign the petition is 100 patrons of the existing district. So that's a way the vote could be forced in the district as well as the city is through that petition. Does that make sense?
It does, and if I can just ask for clarification. I think I'm following, tracking now. So we do have the ability for anyone within the existing district or within the proposed area to have redress and have require an election no matter what the scenario is.
Chair Crummell, Representative, not quite. The people within the existing district have the right to redress. The people in the area to be annexed have the right to vote. And this bill does not change or affect their right to vote in any way.
Okay. So either in the direct right to vote mm-hmm. or through the redress, every citizen within the greater district and the proposed annexation would have the opportunity to cast their vote.
That is, Chair Crummell, Representative, that's correct.
Okay.
That's why that provision we put in there, to ensure that this bill wasn't interpreted as some attempt to take people's right to vote away from them.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Just, sure.
More, the issue with whether the citizens in the city, the area being annexed, have a right to vote, that's a given. I think it's almost sounds flippant, but I don't think they have a right not to vote. Because what we're talking about is levying taxes,
right.
And under ballot measure 50, as you know, they will vote regardless.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Nelson?
I did. Just a quick one, Mr. Chair. This issue came up in my community, where we have a rural fire district, and the question they asked me to find out about is, should the voters be one per household, or should it be all voters? There was something about the fire service that they thought that they would only allow, you know, one, you know, vote per property owner rather than.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I understand.
Heard of that?
That's a new one. I've not heard that one.
Okay, this is recommend came from LCO. So
well, certainly nothing within this bill limits electors' right to vote, and from my knowledge, there's no mechanism by which you narrow the number the people can actually vote to a household versus registered voters. So
okay, thank you. And the last question is on the increase of fire service. For example, you know, if you're the fire district and you're annexing me, the city, and I'm the city now, is going to have increased tax burden. Is that not true?
Well,
and how do you determine what that rate is?
Well, that, if I may, that may or may not be true. The rate is your fixed rate, the district's fixed rate. In the case of Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, we would simply annex the territory and apply our $1.83 rate. the reason I waffle on it ever so slightly is there's an interesting scenario that I can just digress ever so quickly as it relates to West Lynn. In West Lynn, approximately 50% of the funding for fire protection comes from a local option levy, and 50% of the funding for the police protection comes from a local option levy. So a subtle irony about West Lynn is if West Lynn were to annex to TVFNR, we would apply our rate, those two levies would expire, and it would be fairly close to budget neutral for the citizens of West Lynn.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I do have one quick question, and that is with regards to the reduction of taxes for the large district. By taking in the city of West Lynn, for example, could there be a reduction in taxes for the other taxpayers outside of the city of West Lynn?
Mr. Chair, under technically no, because as you know, ballot measure 50 establishes a permanent tax rate, and while the district could always choose to levy a lesser amount, there's no mechanism that I'm aware of to actually lower the tax rate. So I believe that if the cost of providing service in the annexed territory is less than the cost of revenue you spin off through the annexation, there's clearly some efficiencies to be gained for the balance of the district.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Can I have Linda Ludwig, Genoa, and Ken all come up at the same time? You guys won't kill each other, will you? You're sitting together back there, so I figure it's probably okay. Linda, why don't you go ahead and start?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Linda Ludwig, representing the League of Oregon Cities. Just short and sweet, wanted to indicate our support for the bill. We recognize that this bill would allow TVFNR to go ahead and proceed with the annexation possibility, which would be a very positive plus for the city of West Lynn as well as the district, and we completely support all aspects of the bill.
Okay, great, thank you. Genoa, would you like to go ahead?
Thank you, Chair Crummell and members of the committee. I'm Genoa Ingram, representing the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. We are one of the co-requesters of the bill. We just believe that this bill promotes efficiency in government and also provides a level playing field in all annexation procedures, whether it be city to district, district to district, you know, what have you. It just levels the playing field and conforms all annexation statutes so that we have a level playing field, and I'll be happy to respond to any questions. I encourage your support.
Ken?
Mr. Chair, members, Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, similarly want to communicate the fire chief's support for the bill, encourage its passage onto the floor. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions for anyone on this panel? You don't see the need for any amendments. You think the bill, the way that it came out of LC, is good and it meets what everyone's goals are?
Chair Crummell, we have heard...
It's not a trick question.
Chair Crummell, we have heard of no request for amendments, and we would encourage passage of this bill out of this body.
Great. Thank you. Representative Brzezinski.
Just a question. Have you heard of any opposition from any groups or elements? I mean, I guess the biggest thing I see as a safeguard is the provision that allows for the redress. Because I know that in our community, for just annexation for the city as compared to a special district, there's always has been and always will be the distinction of we don't want to be part of that larger group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezinski, no, I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill whatsoever. In fact, I've sent an inquiry out to all of our cities to make sure that there wasn't something here that I was missing mm-hmm. in any particular city district confirmation. And no, we have not. I think with the remonstrance provision, with the fact that the city election still stays solid within the bill, there isn't any change there. It just allows this situation to move forward and doesn't handicap any other situation within the state.
Thank you. Okay. Great. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Linda, the city of West Lynn, have they said whether they're in favor of the bill or or not, or have they just sort of kept quiet?
Mr. Chair, I have not heard that they were in opposition to the bill whatsoever.
Great, thank you. Okay, with that, I'm going to, is there anyone else that wishes to speak on House Bill 2818? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2818. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2818.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
I'll move House Bill 2818 as presented to the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Representative Przanski moves House Bill 2818 as presented to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Jeannie, you want to call the roll, please?
Representative Bakken.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2818, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Representative Przanski, would you like to carry this?
I'll take this one.
Great. Thank you. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2818. And members, let's move right into a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 5, and Patrick, would you give us a lowdown on what is the deal with this bill?
I'm glad to, Mr. Chair. House Joint Memorial 5 requests that Congress extend both the applicability of federal laws that provide accelerated depreciation of business property located on Indian reservations and the employment tax credit for certain employees who work on Indian reservations. One thing to note that's a change from the SMS as you see it, it says may have fiscal impact. I spoke to Adrian Sexton right before our meeting, and she indicated that they will issue a no fiscal impact statement for this.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. With that, then, let's see. We have signed up Roger Martin from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatillas.
And mine.
And both of us come up, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I represent the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. And joining me is Mike Mason, who represents the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. These are the two large land tribes in the state of Oregon with reservations of sizable property. The joint memorial, first of all, I want to say to you that the folklore in the legislature has always been memorial isn't worth the paper that it's printed on because nobody pays any attention to it, and that might be the case with a number of other memorials, but I can tell you the several memorials that this legislature has passed in the last several sessions are paid attention to and used in the Congress. So this, I think, is worth a lot more than the paper it's written on. I want you to note that the sponsorship, which includes one of the fine members of your committee, includes all of the legislators, both in the House and Senate, that represent reservations east of the mountains, along with the leadership of both parties. I think it's important to note that there's solid support for this. The current situation in the federal Congress is that passed in 1994 is an accelerated depreciation for new planted equipment located by an outside business on an Indian reservation. And there's also a tax credit for qualified up to $30,000 in wages, a tax credit for the employment of tribal members in those businesses. The two things that tribes for many generations or at least many decades have suffered from is chronic unemployment and chronic alcoholism. Both those things have been tremendously addressed by the tribes, and this is a small tool in attempting to get some businesses to locate on the reservation. It doesn't cost the state of Oregon anything, and it's a federal tax exemption we're looking for. We want to encourage the Congress to extend both these tax credits and the tax exemption expire on December 31st of this year. They were started in 1994. They expire this year unless they are renewed. And Senator Gordon Smith is now on the Senate Finance Committee. He's going to make an effort, along with many other legislators, to have these extended. And we simply ask you to pass this to encourage, officially give the stamp of the state of Oregon to his work to get these very worthwhile tax credits extended. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Mike, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, Chair Krummel and members of the committee, Michael Mason, for the record, representing Federated Tribes of the Warm Springs reservation of Oregon. This is, as Mr. Martin said, very important to the tribes to foster economic development. Warm Springs is known as really an Indian country in the Northwest, a great success story, and yes, they have been. But their economy has been declining over the last few years, largely because of problems with the timber markets, somewhat with energy, and we now suffer over 40% unemployment on the reservation, which is not unusual on reservations, but a shocking figure for the Warm Springs. So this is a very important incentive to businesses located in the reservation. The brief extension to these credits that was done by the last Congress was not enough to create the incentive or continue the incentive that existed. You know, the fact that it expires at the end of 03, unless the project's already built, the incentive's not there. So there's no ability to plan with this. I would add that, you know, Senator Smith, as Roger said, is very supportive of this. He's also on the Indian Affairs Committee, Senate Indian Affairs Committee now, so he's in the catbird seat to help something like this pass, and it can only help him in his efforts to have this memorial. So thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nelson, did you have a question?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Martin and Mr. Mason, for being here. The reservation in my area, of course, is Grand Round. And we just most recently have heard that we are now going into the gas station business. And in the previous session on the Transportation Committee, the issue of taxes not being charged for the fuel that comes, you know, that is distributed from the business was a big issue. And so I'm just wondering, you know, so beyond this tax credit, there is also another one in that. An individual who would own a fuel station, for example, would not be liable for those taxes. Are there other tax credits that we don't know about other than that one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I'm not sure if I can answer that correctly. I do want the committee to know that unlike reservations in the state of Washington, the reservations in Oregon do collect taxes for the state, such as cigarette taxes. This was an issue on another bill recently. We do collect cigarette taxes. We signed an agreement with the Department of Revenue almost 20 years ago, and it's considered by them to be a model. I believe we also collect the fuel taxes. I know that we have, the Umatilla Reservation has a truck stop on our reservation. We collect all of the fuel taxes that are required. On the Confederate Tribes of the Grand Ronde, the service station may get a federal tax exemption for location there. If it's an outside business, if it's owned by the tribe, it's not going to get this tax exemption.
Oh,
it's
got to
be owned by an outside company coming in.
I see. And follow up. Mr. Chair. So this inspires me to want to come put a business in both locations. I love it, and I love both areas very much. Do I get other protection like property taxes and that I don't have to pay because I'm part of a sovereign nation now in business environment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, if I may attempt to answer that. Last session, as you're aware, the legislature created two new enterprise zones, the reservation enterprise zones, or authorized them to be created, I should say, at both the Umatilla Reservation and the Warm Springs. So you'd be receive treatment as if you're in a non-urban enterprise zone. So you would have a property tax break for several years, and there would not be, in fact, under that bill or that act of the legislature, you would not be subject either to double taxation. So it was really quite a helpful piece of legislation for these tribes.
And my final question, Mr. Chair, please.
Follow up.
Regarding the schools in these districts, now I'm just concerned about all this property tax. How are we going to support our schools? I happen to have one in my area that this is a big issue over right now. You know, who's going to own the school, basically? Grand Round Elementary School. You know, is it long? You know, the native group offered to take it over since we can afford to run it, but who would be responsible for that financial
Mr. Chairman,
school.
Representative Nelson, I'm not sure I can answer. Where's Justin Martin when I need him? He's their government affairs representative. The Grand Ronde are economically in a little different situation than the two tribes we represent. They're well-heeled, so they may be able to. In the case of the Confederate tribes of the Umatilla, the reservation is part of three different school districts, and children from our reservation go to three different, depending on where they live, three different school districts, and I don't think this would have any effect on them at all. I can't answer what the situation is with the Grand Ronde.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, if I may add a bit to that, our elementary school at Warm Springs is part of the 509J school district. It is a public school. But despite that, the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs is going to pay for half of, and has already put up the money to pay for half of the cost of rebuilding that school. So we are paying in, even though it's a public school. So it's, and this again is a federal tax break. It won't affect any of the local funding that goes to schools, and it won't affect the impact aid dollars that go to the school districts overlapping the Umatilla and Warm Springs reservations to make up for the lack of property tax payments by the families of the Indian students that living on the reservations.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
And it also won't affect income taxes that are paid to the state of Oregon.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Not seeing anyone else that wants to testify on House on Memorial 5, I will close the public hearing on HJM 5.
State Trooper.
Oh, okay. And I'm going to open a work. You didn't want to testify, right? Okay. And I'm just being a little anal here. I'm going to open a work session on HJM 5.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
I move HJM 5 as presented to the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Przanski moves HJM 5 as presented to the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
This is an issue that's real important, very important to me. Having some good native blood, and I just want to go on record in support of our reservations and their contributions to our communities, and what we can do in this behalf I think is well worth it.
Sure. Thank you. Representative Vakian? Oh, he's going to carry it? Oh, okay, great. Is there any other discussion? Saying none. Gina, you want to call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. HJM 5, having received the constitutional majority, has declared passed and is on its way to the floor. And Representative Avakian, would you be so kind as to carry this, please?
Be happy to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I will close the work session on HJM 5. And since we don't have anything else before us, we will stand adjourned.
Oh, my. For the record.